Welcome to episode 13 of Page Turn, the Largo Public Library podcast. I'm your host, Hannah. Page Turn is a monthly podcast bringing you information about great books, library news, and fun library tidbits from your favorite programs, as well as a Spanish language book review from Victor. This month's library tidbit comes to us from Dick Powell, a long-term resident of Largo. He shares with us some library and city history. But as always, we start with Reader's Advisory. A Cultural History of Walking explores the ancient practice from ancient Greece to the present, delving into Wordsworth, Gary Snyder, Rousseau, Jane Austen, and other cultural and literary icons to show how this basic activity has been imagined throughout history. Today's Reader's Advisory is Wanderlust, A History of Walking by Rebecca Solnit. Wanderlust is a history of walking and how it has changed human culture and history. It covers everything from the fossil record to specific historical figures and how walking intersects with them. The book does move at a walking pace, and it focuses solely on a Western point of view. Readers may also enjoy In Search of Lost Time by Marcel Proust. In Search of Lost Time follows the narrator's recollection of childhood and experiences into adulthood during the late 19th century to early 20th century aristocratic France, while reflecting on the loss of time and lack of meaning to the world. The novel was initially published in 7 volumes, Swan's Way, In the Shadow of Young Girls in Flower, The Guermantes Way, Sodom and Gomorrah, The Prisoner, The Fugitive, and Finding Time Again. Or, Essays on the Blurring of Art and Life by Alan Kaprow. Alan Kaprow's Happenings and Environments were the precursors to contemporary performance art, and his essays are some of the most thoughtful, provocative, and influential of his generation. His sustained inquiry into the paradoxical relationship of art to life and into the nature of meaning itself is brought into focus in this newly expanded collection of his most significant writings. A new preface and 2 new additional essays published in the 1990s bring this valuable collection up to date. Or, The Old Ways, A Journey on Foot by Robert McFarlane. In this exquisitely written book, Robert McFarlane sets off from his Cambridge, England home to follow the ancient tracks, holloways, drove roads, and sea paths that crisscross both the British landscape and its waters and territories beyond. The result is an immersive, enthralling exploration of the ghosts and voices that haunt old paths, of the stories our tracks keep and tell, and of pilgrimage and ritual. Told in McFarlane's distinctive voice, The Old Ways folds together natural history, cartography, geology, archaeology, and literature. His walks take him from the chalk downs of England to the bird islands of the Scottish Northwest, from Palestine to the sacred landscapes of Spain and the Himalayas. Along the way, he crosses paths with walkers of many kinds, wanderers, pilgrims, guides, and artists. Above all, this is a book about walking as a journey inward and the subtle ways we are shaped by the landscapes through which we move. McFarlane discovers that paths offer not just a means of traversing space, but of feeling, knowing, and thinking. Bonus segment. My personal favorite Goodreads list Wanderlust is on is Microhistory, Social Histories of Just One Thing. Happy reading, everyone. This month's library tidbit comes to us from Dick Powell. Dick's mother, Thelma, worked for the Largo Public Library for several years. I've heard several stories about her. Would you mind sharing a few stories about her life, her library work, and a little bit of your experience?
I'd be glad to do that. I even brought my notes because I had to write it down. She started at the library somewhere around 1958, believe it or not, and that's quite a long time ago, but she became the Largo librarian in 1962 through 1970. The reason that was so significant was, is when she started, the library was still in an old wooden house up on blocks in the middle of downtown Largo. And then it moved to a smaller place right behind that, and then to another one, all during her time as librarian. My time that during there was I was growing up and going to Largo Elementary School, which was a brand new school. And so after school, I had to walk down to the library. And one of my major jobs at that young age was to work in the bindery. I found it fascinating. I love books. And so fascinating to put a book back together from scratch really became something that I was kind of good at, but I really enjoyed. So that's kind of where Mom put me every afternoon until it was time for us to go home. The thing that really didn't work really well, I don't know if you remember back that far, but they had some crazy glues. It wasn't crazy glue. It was the kind of stuff that you would get your fingers, but they would really stick together and not wash off to put the pages back together on the back of the bindery. And that was some interesting stuff. The other thing I really remember about my mom in the library was is she was so interested. If she ordered a book, she would read the entire thing. So if someone came and check it out, she could tell them all about it. And she remembered those things. I mean, it was just crazy how many books she would read in a week and still work that, you know, back then it was 12-hour days. And it was supposed to be 8, but she always put in 12. It was just the way it was. So reading all that all the time, I have to tell you, I've kind of gotten into that. If people come to our house now, they ask my wife and I, how come you have so many books? Well, I guess it rubbed off and we have lots of books. So I think that's the biggest thing I remember is her ability to read every book that came in and remember all the stuff about it. So when someone checked it out, she would say, oh, you're going to love that because, or no, you don't want to read that. It does not. And she would be able to have that commentary with the people. And I think that was pretty good.
So let me just ask you really fast. How old were you when you were working in the bindery? You say you were coming from elementary school and then sixth grade.
I was in sixth grade in Mrs. Fulce's class. And the school was brand new back then. Of course, it's gone now, if you know. It's been torn down. But it was really something. Coming from Fugit Elementary up to Largo Elementary was like going to the big time. And my mom would drop me off to school every morning, then I would walk down there or get a ride from mm-hmm. Mrs. Fulce, the teacher. And she was quite a cool. She had a Corvette. She was cool.
So... I'm still trying to see. You were underage when you were working in the bindery.
Oh, yeah. I know. I didn't get paid or anything.
It was like your after-school chores. Just, your mom would give you, fix this
book.
It was
like, you know, you reported to the library, did your homework, and then, oh, by the way, can you go fix this book or put the plastic jackets on the new books that came in or, you know, there's a shelf back there that needs to be straightened up. It was her way of keeping me busy until it was time for her to close the library. And it was great because I got to be around books.
I mean, I would have enjoyed that as a child, just like the legal side of that these days.
Well, I'm sure you can't do it now.
The one thing I remember, your mother's obituary, at the very end, I think it's at the end at least, there's talk about how she would drive around to patrons' houses for books. Do you know... When she started doing that?
In the early years, there weren't a lot of books in the library. And there was a lot of older people who actually had books they wanted to donate. So the library, you know, did a lot of donation books.
Yeah.
And she would find out who they were from Sadie Johnson and some of the other people who were founding father people in here, the McMullins and the Booths mm-hmm. and the Johnsons and, you know. And she'd go and get them, you know, if they're willing to take and, you know, part with them, she would go and get them and we would bring them in and clean them up and
catalog them, stick them on the shelf. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I didn't get that. I thought from the obituary it was more because we just opened a bookmobile. It's actually gone right now out into the community. And I thought maybe she was doing that kind of thing early in the day.
If somebody was in the hospital, somebody was laid up, she found out about it. Yeah, she would deliver books. Yeah. She just really, you know, she didn't learn how to drive a car for a lot of years mm-hmm. until we came down here and we lived on a dead end street and you didn't drive, you didn't go anywhere. So, when she learned how to drive, boy, she was gone.
She learned how to drive.
She learned how to drive. Yeah. There's a big old pine tree there that has a dent in it. So I'm sure.
She did it all then when she was head librarian. She essentially did fundraising for the library.
Yes.
She was a bookmobile unto herself. That's amazing. That takes some drive.
And in that time of date, my dad was the only mechanic over at West Coast Garage. So there was a whole community of people who knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so when something was needed at the library, you know, something electrical was going on, well, Gilly's, you know, electric would come by and fix it up. Or if they needed new bookshelves, Largo Lumber would take and give the lumber, and my dad and the guys would build the bookshelves. It was a different time and place.
It was when Largo was like a small town, essentially. Like, there wasn't a whole lot. Like, I moved into the area in 96, and we still had orange groves around where we live now. Mm-hmm. Those orange groves were gone within, like, the next 5-10 years, the amount of development in that area. So, and I know Largo was even more small, like, was even smaller and more rural than where I was. So I can't quite imagine it, even though I've seen pictures, because we have a lot of Largo history and a lot of pictures. It's just kind of... it's so developed now that it's so weird to think about how not developed it was.
It's downtown Largo was really downtown Largo. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Jackson, who owned the garage, and, you know, they would have the fish fries every year. But the library was a central part, because it was in what we called Central Park, which had the fountain and everything in it. Mm-hmm. But it was an old two-story wooden building up on blocks.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a, you know, wood floor, and as the little kids, we got to play up underneath it and, you know.
Oh, like crawling under the
around.
Library?
Yeah. I mean, remember, it was a little bitty town.
Yeah.
So it's much, much different than what it is now. When Mom got the job as librarian, they told her that she'd have to live in the city. We lived on 126th Avenue, which was just out of the area of Largo at the time. And so she had to go, and my dad had to get that road annexed into the city of Largo so Mom could get the job.
That doesn't sound nefarious at all.
it was a terrible time, because once they got in the city of Largo, then they had to be on sewers, which meant the sewer had to come down our street, and we had to hook into it, and my dad had a lot of words about that.
Oh, yeah.
The Largo Library, as it sits today, is a real testament to the town of Largo, I think. And the founding people that ran the library, who got it started and got the people interested in it, and started bringing people, that this was a gathering place. And that's really what I believe my mom put into the library, that it was a gathering place. It was a place to, if you needed to hold a meeting, you could. If you just wanted to come and hang out and read a book, you could. Mm-hmm. It was a safe place for young people to come and gather, that, you know, there for them.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot to do back then in town of Largo. We did have our own movie theater. It was an old Quonset hut. I don't know if you remember that back that far. But, you know, there really wasn't a lot other than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you went to school, you went to church, you maybe caught a movie if you were lucky enough to be able to afford that. But the library was someplace you could go and didn't cost anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really became the meeting place, the place to go and meet your girlfriend, the place to go and meet people.
Yeah.
So what I see now is this big building. I've come down here for my book signings and things, and I'm always amazed how big the place is and how many books are here. And because I get to travel and speak on stage around the country, this is one of the nicer libraries that I visit, just so you know.
We'll take that compliment, yeah.
We've been very fortunate, my wife and I, to do what I do. And it all stemmed, I believe, from growing up in the library and around books. And, mm-hmm. Even though my books are, you can get them on Kindle and all that stuff, I still like to pick up a book and turn the pages and smell the pages. And I still do.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, sharing some stories and some history.
Well, it's my pleasure. Like I said, in our family, the library was a central point, and it was my mom's love.
And now it's time for Book Traveler with Victor.
Hola y bienvenidos a Viajero de Libros. Mi nombre es Victor y soy el bibliotecario de acceso a la comunidad aquí en la Biblioteca Pública de Largo. Hoy les voy a hablar sobre el libro Pequeñas Mentiras o Big Little Lies por Leanne Moriarty. Sinopsis. Algunas veces, las pequeñas mentiras son las más letales. Madeline es una fuerza de la naturaleza. Es divertida, mordaz y apasionada. Lo recuerda todo y no perdona a nadie. Ni a su ex marido y su nueva esposa, que se acaban de mudar junto a ella. Celeste posee el tipo de belleza que hace que el mundo se pare a mirar. Aunque a veces puede parecer un poco nerviosa, ¿quién no lo estaría con ese par de gemelos traviesos? Ella y su marido llevan una vida de ensueño, pero los sueños tienen un precio. Y Celeste tiene que decidir cuánto está dispuesta a pagar. Jane, madre soltera y nueva en la ciudad, es tan joven que la confunden con la niñera. Además, alberga preocupaciones impropias de su edad y tiene ciertas dudas secretas sobre su hijo. Pequeñas Mentiras es una extraordinaria historia sobre estas tres mujeres en una encrucijada sobre exmaridos y segundas esposas, madres e hijas, escándalos de patio de colegio y las peligrosas mentiras que nos contamos a nosotros mismos para poder sobrevivir. Mi opinión personal, Pequeñas Mentiras es de esos libros que te empiezan a crear intriga desde el principio, ya que en el primer momento sabemos que ha habido una muerte sospechosa, pero no sabemos quién ha muerto ni qué ha ocurrido. La historia está ambientada en la península de Periwee, un lugar de sueño situado en Australia. Las protagonistas principales son tres mujeres bastante diferentes que se conocen gracias a sus hijos pequeños que van a la misma escuela. A pesar de que sus vidas son bastante distintas, crean un vínculo entre ellas desde el primer día. Y poco a poco veremos cómo se forma una gran amistad. Además de estas tres mujeres, conoceremos una multitud de personajes más, como por ejemplo el resto de las madres que llevan a sus hijos al colegio. Me ha parecido muy interesante ver el comportamiento de estas madres, ya que creo que es un reflejo de lo que pasa en la realidad. Son mujeres con prejuicios y separatistas, a las que les gusta exprimir los chismes y esparcirlos por todos lados. Desde el día de la presentación, ya empiezan a tener los primeros problemas y malos rollos, que irán arrastrando a lo largo de la historia, hasta el día del concurso de preguntas y respuestas organizado por la escuela, que es el día que sucede un accidente trágico. La cuestión es que la historia narra desde el principio lo que sucede en el colegio y el día a día familiar de los protagonistas. Pero al final de algunos capítulos hay una especie de testimonio de la gente que asistió al concurso de preguntas y respuestas, donde nos cuentan sus sospechas o hacen pequeñas declaraciones de lo que ocurrió. Muchos de estos testimonios tienen discrepancias entre ellos y distorsionan bastante la realidad. Pero la cuestión es que poco a poco te vas dando cuenta de una idea de lo que sucedió aquella noche y empiezas a crear tu propia opinión sobre quién fue la víctima y quién será el culpable. Lo que más me ha gustado del libro ha sido conocer con tanta profundidad a las protagonistas. Son ejemplo perfecto de lo que las personas somos simplemente la punta de un iceberg y escondemos muchos secretos en nuestro interior. Al conocerlas, te das cuenta de que nadie tiene una vida perfecta, de que los objetos materiales y las cosas superficiales no tienen ningún sentido en el momento de la verdad y de que la vida no siempre asusta con las buenas personas. Como punto negativo, destacaría que hay un momento en que la novela se estaba haciendo larga y había capítulos bastante repetitivos. En cuanto al final, debo reconocer que estoy bastante satisfecho porque las conclusiones a las que llegué no fueron correctas y logró sorprenderme mucho. Ni por un momento llegué a pensar lo que podría suceder y lo que ocurrió esa noche. Y hubo cosas que me dejaron con la boca abierta. La autora logró un buen balance entre los elementos dramáticos y las situaciones extrañas y graciosas que se desarrollan entre los padres. Es un libro que recomendaría muchísimo si te gusta el misterio. Es todo por hoy y nos vemos en la próxima edición de Viajero de Libros. Hasta luego.
Thanks, Victor, for another great book review. Remember to check out the English language translation in the show notes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Here are some upcoming library events to keep track of. May 1st, PowerPoint 2013 for Beginners at 3 p.m. in the Computer Lab. May 4th, Ancestry DNA, I Have My Results, What's Next? At 1 p.m. in Jenkins Room A. May 8th, Chapter Chat at Evermore Cafe at 6 p.m. at the Evermore Cafe. May 11th, Library Legos at 2 p.m. in the Children's Program Room. May 13th, Poets Live at 6:30 p.m. in the First Floor Quiet Reading Room. May 15th, Adult Sign Language at 6 p.m. in Jenkins Room C. May 18th, Hiking the Pilgrim Paper Trail at 11 a.m. in Jenkins Room B. May 20th, Book Bingo at 6 p.m. in the Children's Program Room. May 22nd, Getting Started with YouTube at 3 p.m. in the Computer Lab. May 29th, Orphan Trains and the Children Who Rode in Them at 10 a.m. in the Local History Room. Remember, the library will be closed May 27th for Memorial Day. Have a great month, everyone. We hope to talk to you again soon. Okay, I'm gonna have to edit that out.
You don't have to. It's all good.
I don't know.